I spent the next 48 hours with the curtains drawn, drinking, sleeping, and watching as many programs about antiques as I could find. I made some notes during that two-day period. The object of the exercise was to analyse why I had behaved so absurdly that afternoon, and to list all possible responses to that behaviour. "Why horrible to nurse?" I had written, and underneath, 1. Arsehole. 2. Hitting on Penny. 3. Good-looking and young. Piss me off. On another sheet of paper, I had scrawled, "Courses of action." A. Kill myself. B. Ask Maureen not to use that nurse anymore. C. Don't. C. Stop there, either because I fell into a stupor at that point, or because don't was a concise way of expressing a profound solution to all my problems. Think how much better things would be for me if I didn't, wouldn't, and never had. It took me an embarrassing amount of time to realize that other people would do a better job of explaining what the purpose of my Starbucks explosion might have been. This, I supposed, was why people persisted with the whole notion of friends. I seem to have lost all mine around the time I went to prison, but I knew plenty of people who'd be prepared to tell me what they thought of me. In fact, it seemed that my propensity for letting people down and alienating them would actually serve me in good stead here. Friends and lovers might try to throw a kindly light on the episode, but because I had only ex-friends and ex-lovers, I was ideally placed. I only knew people who would give it to me with both barrels. Indeed, so successful was my first phone call that I didn't really need to speak to anyone else. My ex-wife was direct, articulate, and clear-sighted, and I actually ended up feeling sorry for people living with someone who loved them, when not living with someone who loathed you was so obviously the way to go. "Where have you been?"
"At home, drunk."
"Have you listened to your messages?"
"No. Why?"
"I left you a few thoughts about the other afternoon." "Ah, now, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about. What do you think it was all about?" "Well, you're unbalanced, aren't you? Unbalanced and poisonous. An unbalanced, poisonous tosser." This was a good start, but it lacked focus. "The unbalanced tosser part I find less interesting than the poisonous part. Could you talk more about that?" "Maybe you should pay someone to do this," said Cindy.
"What, you mean a therapist?"
She snorted. "I was thinking more of one of those women who will pee all over you if you pay her enough. Isn't that what you want? You clearly feel so awful about yourself that you don't mind being abused. Isn't that their problem?"
"Whose problem?"
"These men who need women to..." "Never mind." I was beginning to perceive what she was driving at. It was true that being called names felt good, or rather, appropriate. "You know why you turned on that poor guy, don't you?"
"No, that's why I called you."
If Cindy had known how much damage she could have done by stopping right there, the temptation would have been too much for her. I began to see why she had reached for a sexual metaphor. I would have been so frustrated by any attempt at coitus interruptus that I would have had to go off and call myself names. Luckily, though, Cindy was determined to go all the way. "I mean, he was 15 years younger than you and much better looking, but it wasn't that. He'd done more with his life that afternoon than you've ever done with yours."
"Yes! Yes!
You ponce around on television and screw schoolgirls, and he pushes disabled kids around in a wheelchair, probably for the minimum wage. It's no wonder Penny wanted to chat him up." "Thank you. That's great. Don't you dare put the phone down. I've only just started. I've got 12 years worth of this stuff. Oh, I'll be back for more. I promise." You see? Ex-wives. Really. Everybody should have at least one.